time for our weekly Pac-12 conversation with San Jose Mercury News reporter John Wilner. Brought to you by Simply Seattle. Our friends at SimplySeattle.com have the most amazing collection of all things Seattle. Seahawks gear, UW hats, and the largest selection of Sonics gear anywhere in the world. Learn more at SimplySeattle.com.
All right, SimplySeattle.com has a great package. You're looking to go to the Champions of Change celebrity basketball game on Sunday at Climate Pledge Arena. You can get two tickets, a t-shirt, or a hoodie, and they'll make a donation for you on behalf of Champions of Change as well. To get that package, jump on the web, simplyseattle.com. You also can get your Disappointed Since 1977 shirt at simplyseattle.com or your Someday shirt at simplyseattle.com. And those are $19.77. You buy one, you get one free at simplyseattle.com. They've done it again, man. They're unbelievable.
Did you see the stat thrown out by our friend Gary Daugherty on Twitter today?
Was it a Stats Are for Losers, this one?
Stats Are for Losers.
He said that if the Mariners went 91-71 for the next 20 years, so 20 great years of baseball in a row, they would start the 2043 season still with an under 500 overall record for their franchise. Yeah.
Okay, so that makes me feel real good. John Wilner joining us right now. John, make us feel better about Seattle sports. Say something good about Seattle. The Mariners stink. The Seahawks aren't going to be very good. Is the Husky football team going to save the day for us in September? What do you think?
I think they'll be better than last year. Does that save your day? I don't know.
No, they were 4-8 last year.
How much better, Wilner?
They could be 5-7. What does that do for us?
Well, I mean, it depends on where your bar is. I got to tell you, I didn't realize the Mariners have been that bad that many years.
Yeah, it's been brutal. 20 years of frustration followed by, 6 years of good play followed by 19 years of frustration before that.
See you later!
It's basically 39 out of 45 years that have been crappy, John.
That's how bad they've been, John, that you're not even paying attention anymore. That is their biggest legacy. Well, John Wilner, again, is with us, courtesy of SimplySeattle.com. I know where our pal John Canzano was writing about George Kliafkoff and his first year on the job. And is it safe to say that so far George Kliafkoff is doing everything people were asking him to do after year number one?
I think so. I mean, it's a little bit of a complicated issue because some of the things that Pac-12 fans really want to happen are not directly within his control. I mean, the college football playoff is a perfect example, right? He's one of 11 votes in that room. And as badly as the Pac-12 needs it to expand immediately, that's not something he can do. I think that the conference office is basically doing everything it can do to support the schools the right way, to set the schools up for success. Ultimately, it's about, the teams winning and losing. The conference office has got to set policy and provide resources to succeed. And I think, again, within their control, they're doing that.
Canzano wrote that it was a doozy of a win, year one of Kliafkoff, and you mentioned some of the kind of back channel reasons why it's been a win, but Pac-12 fans might not see how tangibly it's been a win in the first year. Can you talk to some Pac-12 fans about what tangibly can you hold that says this is much better now under Kliafkoff?
Well, yeah, I mean, it was tough because it was a bad year on the field. And I think that, Pac-12 football, certainly there's an issue with talent. And I do think COVID had a carryover impact on a lot of teams. I think the change they've made for determining who's going to get into the football championship game was a positive step because it improves their chances, maybe on the margins, but it does improve their chances of getting into the playoff. And I think that he did the right thing for the conference by not voting for the playoff because you didn't want to join a group where you weren't sure what the rules of the game were going to be, and that was kind of the issue. But the biggest thing he's done is behind the scenes, he's gotten all the schools to basically work together again and to trust the conference office, to trust each other, to set policy that makes everybody better. And there was a lot of, it was a bad scene behind the scenes. It was a bad scene at the end of the Larry Scott tenure. Nobody was trusting the conference office, and it was hard to get things done in a positive fashion.
Well, John Wilner is with us again, courtesy of SimplySeattle.com. I want to go back to Kleofkoff and the College Football Playoff Committee in a minute, but Kyle Whittingham got a big raise from Utah. He deserves it. I mean, that's been a hell of a move by them, joining the Power Five and the Pac-12, and they may have the best program going right now in this conference. We'll see if USC allows that to stay that way, and Oregon as well, and hopefully UW down the road, but they certainly have done great things by making the jump. And you wrote on your website about the Pac-12 football salaries and who's overpaid and who's underpaid. I would love to access that article, but I don't have a San Jose Mercury News login, so I can't. So that's a little bit of a nudge to you to send us a code when the show's over, by the way, pal. But give us your take on who's overpaid and who's underpaid. Who's at the top and the bottom of that list in this conference?
Next time, maybe don't mince words. I
guess. Give me a damn password, Wilner, you cheap bastard. How's that?
Thank you. I think that what's interesting, one of the most interesting things to me, and this goes directly to your listenership, to be honest, is, and I wrote about this, the disparity between Washington and Oregon. Oregon is paying Dan Lanning, $29 million over 6 years, and the Huskies are paying Kalen DeBoer $16 million over 5 years. Lanning's never been a head coach. DeBoer's been a head coach. It just kind of is more evidence that speaks to kind of a different philosophy about going about major college football between the two institutions. Philosophies that I think are getting more divergent almost every year, it seems.
Well, it seems to me like the Huskies got a steal of a deal and Oregon overpaid.
Well, you could argue that. I think that is one of the scenarios that absolutely could play out. And it will be, and I wrote in the article, you don't know. You don't know who overpaid, who underpaid. Did Washington go cheap? Did Oregon go excessive? Or does Washington have a great deal for $3 million a year, whatever it is? We'll see how it plays out, but it does reflect a different attitude, I think, between the two schools.
So are you saying then that you're not quite ready yet to say who the most overpaid coach is in the conference? Is that what you're saying, or do you have a guy now?
Well, I mean, as of right now, the most overpaid coach in the conference is Herm Edwards, because he's got $3.7 million, program is about to get wiped out by the NCAA.
Right.
So overpaid, I think Carl Durrell might be overpaid at 3.6, given where his program is at this moment. There's not that many overpaid coaches, partly because the Pac-12 doesn't pay that much, right?
Right.
That's a big issue. And you compare their salaries to other conferences, and you could say they're being smart with their money, or you could say that they're not spending enough to get the best coaching.
Well, I got one for you. I know we're going to go back to football for a second, but is Mike Hopkins the most overpaid basketball coach in the conference?
You know what? I don't honestly know what all the current contracts are for basketball off the top of my head. Mm. Hopkins is what, like $2.8 million, I think, a year?
Yep.
Right around there?
Yep.
So, I mean, that's probably that's the kind of deal where he looked underpaid for 2 years, and now you could argue, well, that's a little on the high side for the last three seasons.
Well, you mentioned Herm Edwards, and I'm just wondering, we're sitting here now, this is like a year and a half into this thing. How does this guy still have a job? They've lost assistant coaches. Did they not hire Brian Billick on their staff in some form? Is that correct, John? Is Brian there now?
He is on the staff. I think he is technically or officially, I think, might be a special advisor.
Okay.
Kind of a role Marvin Williams played.
Because the first thing I thought of when they hired Brian Billick is that, well, when Herm Edwards gets fired halfway through the season, they'll have him step down and coach the football team. Does that make any sense?
Oh, I think it makes a lot of sense. And you could, that might be the most realistic scenario is he would serve as the interim coach if Edwards gets fired right before the season or during the season. Look, the reason he's got a job is because ASU's administration, the athletic director and the president, don't think that they have seen enough evidence to warrant getting rid of her. You know, I think there's a good chance that the NCAA is going to come down with some level one violations. And at that point, it's going to be almost impossible for them to justify keeping him employed. I can't imagine the scenario playing out the way it has at any other institution. Any other school would have gotten changed out their head coach. ASU just does things differently.
So, John, Jim Harbaugh came out on a podcast this week and says, I've got no intention of paying signing bonuses to students to pick Michigan. And he also added that he does not see it as his role to involve himself on how players profit. He drew an apparent contrast, obviously, with his rival Ryan Day. So what's the best policy? A coach to come out and say, yeah, we pretty much need $11 million to keep all our players, or a coach like Harbaugh that says, hey, not my job?
A great question. I don't know. I think if you're in Columbus, Ohio, what Day did is probably just fine. You're trying to round up money from your supporters. Michigan takes a little bit different view. You know, it's not unlike the differences between Oregon and Washington, to be honest. Michigan's view of this whole thing is a little bit more like Washington's.
Yep.
And I think Oregon is like Ohio State in terms of, you know, aggressively pursuing NIL deals through their donors. There's, you know, if they're not equal, Oregon does not equal Ohio State. You know, Washington does not equal Michigan, but the relationship between the two is similar.
Yeah. Well, I'll be honest with you. I'm not trying to be a smartass here, Dick. I don't put a lot of stock in Harbaugh saying that, because Harbaugh said, I'm not paying signing bonuses. It's almost like he would say, I'm not paying signing bonuses, but that guy will over there.
That's right. That's exactly right.
And point to a booster or a donor who can take care of the whole damn thing for you. John, before you go, Pac-12 football media day about a month away in LA, still a few weeks, but what's the big story going to be? What's the dominant headline going to be this year at media day, you think?
Well, I think that one of them will be the new coaches, right? There's four new head coaches.
Yep.
I think that'll be, and Lincoln Riley is going to probably dominate the headlines to a certain extent. I think all the new quarterbacks, right? There's seven schools with transfer quarterbacks. That'll be a big topic. And then at the conference level, you know, I'm sure they're going to announce some kind of strategic change in football. Best guess is it's going to have to do with the schedule. I think that they are going to try to get, you know, the schedule right now is based on the divisions.
Right.
And I think they are going to try to move to a more balanced schedule, and they could announce something about that. Those will be my guesses, but I mean, it's mostly going to be the Lincoln Riley show. It's in LA, and he's the biggest name coach in the conference.
Well, you mentioned a couple weeks ago about ideas to overhaul the schedule. Are we going to see movement from the Alliance on scheduling? I mean, this just seems like a no-brainer. I mean, you fill your schedule with a Big Ten team one year and an ACC team the next year, and you just go back and forth and back and forth, and you always have every Pac-12 school playing a Big Ten or an ACC school the other year.
I think they'd like to get to something like that, Dick. The part of the issue is most of these schools are already booked up for for 6-8 years out, and they already have ACC and Big Ten schools lined up. I mean, the Washington Michigan State series is just an example, right? There's a there's like 45 scheduled games between the Pac-12 and the SEC. So they can talk all they want about scheduling ACC and Big Ten as part of the alliance, but there's a ton of SEC games, and there's a ton of Big 12 games and Big Ten games. So it's going to be hard for them to, if you want to start a kind of a rigid format where they are doing exactly what you said, it probably can't start till the 2030s.
Yeah, well, listen, man, it's obviously got it's something that's got to happen because they got to get those games on the schedule. But it is painful to think about how far some of those games are and how long the wait's going to be. I do got one more for you because I promised I'd bring this up. Our buddy Bruce Feldman wrote that Wazoo is such an intriguing team right now. The program's on its third coach since 2019, but there are so many reasons for optimism, starting with four gifted transfers who followed new coordinators to Pullman. I am officially on the Cam Ward is overhyped, is going to be a bust, and he won't start 10 games bust. There's one seat left next to me.
Wow.
Do you want it?
That's called the Spencer Rattler bust.
Do you want the seat next to me on the softy says Cam Ward's going to be a bust? Are you with me? Huh?
I'm not with you. I don't think he's going to be bust. I think he's going to be really good. Now, 10 games, I don't know. You know, that means they got to keep him healthy, right? And that's partly out of his control. But I think he's going to be, you know, a top four or five quarterback in the Pac-12 this coming year.
Okay.
If he stays healthy.
Okay, fine. Does that say more about him or less about the quality of quarterbacks in the conference right now?
No comment.
What do you mean, no comment?
A little of both, right?
I'm kidding. I think that there is a chance that the quality of quarterbacking is going to be better this coming year, but certainly it's not like it was when you had, you know, 5-6 years ago, Jared Goff and Josh Rosen and Sam Darnold and all those guys, Herbert. It's not like that. There's definitely room on that bus near the front.
Right. No question about it. The household names, man, there's not as many as there used to be for sure. But it sounds like you're writing a story on that topic, so we'll let you off the hook for now with more detail and expect it in the San Jose Mercury News. Just make sure you send Dick and I some passwords so we can log on, for God's sakes. Hey, John, great stuff, man. We'll talk in a week. Appreciate it, buddy.
Thanks a lot, guys.
All right, John Wilner with us. Again, courtesy of our friends at SimplySeattle.com. Ask me why I think Cam Ward's going to be a bust.
I was going to ask you
that. Go ahead.
Why do you think Cam Ward's going to be a bust?
I'll tell you next segment. Okay. Coming up on Softy and Dick right here on Sports Radio 93.3 KJR FM. Brian Schmetzer joining us at 5:45 on the radio show.